That was what had formerly offered. Imam Hassan Solomon, who actually is going to take overall, well, not overall, I mean, take co-responsibility for this bill. For those of you who don't know, each bill in this committee is co-chaired by a member of the committee, and actually it shouldn't just necessarily be a member of the majority party, it just strikes me. Let's look into that. Then Bulalani Magwanishi has got ANC duties. He's got an REC meeting, and it's a Monday, and as you know, normally Mondays are allocated, of course, for constituency work and party-related matters. Imam Hassan Solomon will be here at 11, will take over more or less from me. I see we have Mustafa Demerva apologizing, which implies he didn't receive a notice. He will go down in the Guinness Book of Records. Can somebody quote me on this? As the only member of any parliament, where's the press? Can you quote me on this? The only member of any parliament in the history of democracy that for 9 full months or more, I've been chairing for how long, JJ? 9 months. Sounds to you like 3 years, I know, because we fight so much, but and fight is used in the not specific sense of the word, in the very generic sense, and in the very specific sense of JJ and me. You cannot help but exchange the way we do. But all I'm saying is that, can the press quote us on this? Quote me specifically. No way in the history of democracies anywhere in the world has a member of parliament not received a notice for 9 full months. Although, interestingly, on the 2 occasions when we were merely meeting for 5 minutes to vote on the bill, he happened to get the notice. So he turned up to vote on a bill for 3 to 5 minutes, is that right? But since September to now, we are told you have not been ever giving Mr. Van der Merwe an invitation. I know not why. But I'm not going to ask you because obviously that's utter nonsense. I'm going to reply to that in the House, by the way, because it's a bad reflection on Lolly Sabisi. Will you remind me, by the way, who's going to remind me? Who's responsible? Lolly, you're the committee secretary. The next debate we have in the House, he will be there. He'll be given a chance to reply. I want to raise this thing, slide it in. It's utter nonsense that he doesn't get invitations. It is right as the chief whip of that party not to come because he's got other responsibilities. But to suggest that he's not notified about meetings, I will respond to that in the House since he raised it in the House. But Lolly, I don't even ask you a single question. Okay. You want to say something, Sibyl?
No.
I will do it in his presence. I will say what I said here exactly in the House when he's there.
Chair, I just wanted to say that he obviously does have other duties as well.
That's fine. Oh, of course we understand. Our chief whip doesn't attend any meeting. That's fine. But to suggest that there's no notices, hey, come, come. Let's not take this any further. I will note that when I said it, you defended his right not to be here because of his responsibility. That's fine. Now, may I also welcome Sue Ann Isaac. She, of course, has written us an overview of the bills. Can I just finish?
I just want to ask about the responsibilities.
Oh.
Are they parliamentary or are they his own legal practice responsibilities?
That's a good one.
Anybody listening? That's a good one. You want to repeat that, JJ?
Okay.
On the issue, then, of Sue Ann Isaac, she is the person who has done for us an overview, thank you very much, of the bills. Also to suggest that this is, many of us just rolled into Parliament this morning, and obviously today we were hoping to take almost wholly just the initial overview of the bills that you're going to do first, and then the submissions from the public, and then do the chart that we normally table. So the idea wasn't that we would proceed clause by clause. But given that we have so few requests for submissions orally before this committee, the written submissions are all there and you've got them, but there's so few submissions, that's right. There's literally 2, is that right? There's one that will only take place tomorrow because the person who requested it is no more with that organization and they want to find a replacement. Is that right? Is that Idasa? Okay, Idasa will be at 10 o'clock tomorrow. Secondly, there's a submission from the South African Catholic Bishops Conference. You are here. Is that right? Okay, so the person will come at 11. In any case, by which time you'll have more or less hopefully finished yours. So can we hand over then to the department? Before we do, is anybody wants to raise anything? Yes.
Yeah, if I may please, I had already made other arrangements. I have to leave at midday today, but I will be back tomorrow, okay?
You have a researcher around here. Yeah. Is he or she in the meeting?
We can bring him in.
Yeah, they can participate too. You know, it's fine. It's an informal process so they can represent your view. I'm sure that's okay. Is there any problem with that? We've offered that to the DA. it's an informal process, but now.
I wanted to ask, I mean, with the ADAS submission, I mean, I'm only seeing it, unfortunately, we only got the submissions now. But what are they actually, are they proposing any amendments?
I haven't seen it. I've also received them. They all came very late.
Yes, but I think the point I'm trying to make is if they're just going to tell us how bad floor crossing is, and how they've argued for a long time against it, you know, they had the opportunity to come today. Why are we there? If they're not going to say anything substantial, I don't think we should. What's the point of entertaining them tomorrow?
Okay, firstly, because, as you know, you yourself subscribe to the view that we should encourage and be activistic and interact with the parliament. You've done it on the very bill that you mainly chair, charge of this bill. You allow them to comment on the last version of the bill, right, let's be fair to you. Secondly, it is ITASA, and they've had a vested stake in this thing. Thirdly, even if they come to Winch and Wine and say, we told you, so that's their right.
Yeah,
fourthly, the person who actually prepared their presentation, Gadanov Lolly, I remember what you told me on Friday, has actually unfortunately left ITASA last week or so. Is that right? Not coming. Oh, okay. Well, she spoke to him on Friday. He said he's coming. He's not here. But it's fine. It's no crime. We can entertain the person. Let them come and whinge and whine. It's, Parliament is also meant to be like serving a psychotherapeutic role. You know, people come here and they get angry. And that's what parliaments are. That's what we are, especially in emerging democracies. It's fine. People can come and whinge and whine. Next week, JJ, what are you going to do when people come here and they whinge and whine about scorpions? What are you going to say to them? Have you got any amendments?
No, but the point I'm trying to make, Eunice, is that they're in agreement with the bills, as far as I can see from briefly looking at their submission. Okay. If they were going to come and say, we disagree with the bill, or we want so-and-so, this particular section changed, fine, we would need to hear them. But all we're going to all it seems they're going to say, and I'd need to study the thing more thoroughly, is they're not going to actually add any value to the debate, because they're in agreement. So that's the difference with the Child Justice Bill, because people were commenting and things were developing. Here there's no debate. Everybody had the opportunity, the adverts were out well in advance, they had the opportunity to come today. They must come. And if they're not here, then I don't know why we entertain them unless they've got something new to say.
Okay, can I suggest something then? I speak with them at tea time. Is it tea time? Or at 1 o'clock? And, well, can we speak to them and see if they can't come today? Lolly, can we manage? Then I speak to them and find out what they're saying, and then I discuss with JJ tomorrow over the phone and see whether he will be amenable to them. And I'll speak to the opposition party. Is that okay? Can we compromise like that? Steve?
Yeah, I think it is important for some like us as the ACDP and yourself as well to have the opportunity to say, I told you so. So there's nothing wrong with that, but I do appreciate your approach to this as well. Thank you, Chair.
In Parliament, you see the difference between you and me, JJ.
Yeah, but JJ, the difference is, while I agree with everything you say, it is what is the role of Parliament. And quite frankly, can I be upfront in the interest of openness and transparency? What happens is when people come and do that, civil, you may have forgotten me, by the civil used to be in the committee that I chaired at the time, local government, the most wonderful committee that I have had the privilege of being associated with. Not that I'm saying this isn't a wonderful committee too, but I was a civic activist as JJ, you know, so that's where my heart is. It still is, by the way. Somebody listening? Now, the point is, so, you know what? I should tell you this. What happens is, with people like ITASA, if they make no amendments, then I give them my Swiss bank account, and I say, what you would have paid a therapist, pay me. So, you know, I benefit too. Now, why don't you come more often? Okay, over there to the department. Everybody's got Sue and Isaac. Julian there too. Nesbitt, yes, welcome Julian. And there's Christine, of course, Footstone. The empire grows, except that the emperor is not here for life, eh? That's the only difference. So we should look into that. I mean, you know, once you build an empire like this, 2 secretaries, 1 assistant, 3 researchers, hey, you should be here for life, eh? Yeah. Okay, let's go on. Over then to Dion, who's leading us. Shall we welcome, by the way, may not know, they introduced themselves very quickly, but two of them I know very warmly. Myron, you know, JJ, former UDF activist, and of course he's wearing a different capacity now, but we know each other from at least the early 80s. He's from Durban, the colonial power in KZN. And then Kwani Lo I know very well also. He and I interacted in the early hours of many mornings. Dion's looking at his watch and saying, won't this guy pipe down? Dion, I'm over. Okay. You can send me notes as well, Dion, and say pipe down. It won't help, but you can. It's your right. It's your right. Kwani, welcome. Kwani Lo used to be with DPLG, and then he left to go to the Mpumalanga local government department, and then he went on his private consultancy and is back in the department for 2 years as a consultant. Welcome. Okay, over then to Dion and the team. Sorry. Ah, yes, just introduce yourself. Sorry, I don't know you because you came after.
Mark Kaisetaka from DPLG, Deputy Manager, Institutional Development Systems.
Now, obviously, they're here because we are amending the municipal legislation as well. Thank you all. Over then to Dion and his team.
Thank the presentation. Thanks. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try to be as brief as possible. Members of this committee, or I think the majority of the members of this committee, were part of the passing of the floor crossing legislation in 2002 and 2003. The common objective of that legislation was to enable a member of National Assembly, provincial legislature, or municipal council to become a member of another political party whilst the UOC retains the seat. And secondly, to enable an existing political party to merge with another party, to subdivide into more than one party, or any subdivision, or to subdivide any subdivision to merge with another party. Since then, Chairperson, the political terrain which necessitated the floor crossing has changed. You know that it has been criticized in the media, by public in general, by political parties. So therefore, the decision was taken to abolish. Giving effect to that decision means that we have to revert back to the position prior to 2002. Now, the bills before the committee today seeks exactly to give effect that the Constitution 14th Amendment Bill abolishes floor crossing in National Assembly and provincial legislatures. The 15th Amendment seeks to abolish floor crossing in municipal councils, and the General Laws Amendment Bill contains consequential amendments to six ordinary acts emanating from the provisions of the Constitution 14th and 15th Amendment Bill. Chairperson, these bills, because they are in the same matter, have to be passed as a package in Parliament. In any event, that is the view of the Parliament, the bills must be dealt with as a package. And secondly, as the next window period for floor crossing on local government level is on the 1st of September 2009, these bills have to be passed before the 1st of September 2009. I have distributed documents containing copies of all the sections and schedules of the Constitution and other national legislation that are to be amended by the three bills before the committee. If we now quickly turn to the provisions of the respective bills, Chairperson, the Constitution 14th Amendment Bill, as I mentioned, seeks to abolish floor crossing in National Assembly and provincial legislatures. The effect thereof will be that the member of the National Assembly or provincial legislature will no longer be able to become a member of another party whilst retaining his or her membership of the National Assembly and provinces, and also to avoid or abolish the right of existing political parties to merge with another political party or to subdivide and merge with another party. I'm not going to go into detail of the clauses of the bill's Chairperson. I assume we will do that at a later stage, but clause 1 to 4 and clause 5A of the 14th Amendment Bill seeks to effect the consequential amendments to certain sections of the Constitution, and then clause 6, which is the main clause, seeks to repeal Schedule 6, capital A of the Constitution, which provides for floor crossing in the National Assembly and provincial legislatures. Chairperson, then, Section 15 of the Newman Bill seeks to abolish floor crossing in municipal councils or in local government. Seeks to claim that the member cannot join another party when retaining its membership, or that parties cannot or will no longer be able to merge or to subdivide. Towards 1 to 3 of the 15th Amendment Bill affect consequential amendments. Towards 4 of that bill seeks to amend Section 158 of the Constitution so as to provide for the filling of vacancies in municipal councils. And then Clause 5, which is the main clause, repeals Schedule 6B of the Constitution providing for floor crossing in local government level. That is as far as the two Constitution Amendment Bills are concerned, Chair President. The General Laws Amendment Bill, as I mentioned, firstly gives effect, or seeks to give effect to the, or contains consequential amendments to six national laws emanating from the Constitution, 14th Amendment Bill and the 15th Amendment Bill. And then secondly, again, it also contains amendments which do not relate to floor crossing, but which gives effect to a report by this committee in 2005 when it adopted, or when this committee adopted the Constitutional Matters Amendment Bill. The proposed amendments that relate to floor crossing is, or are, for example, clause 1 that seeks to amend section 16A of the Electoral Commission Act. That section enables political parties to change its name at any time. That's the second consequential amendment, or the other consequential amendments relate to the public funding of the Representative Political Parties Act 1979. Clause 4A of the bill seeks to repeal section 6A of the Funding Act. That section specifically provides for the repayment of unspent balances by political parties after a floor crossing period. Then clauses 7, 8, and 9 contain consequential amendments. Clause 10 also contains a consequential amendment to the Determination of Delegates, National Council of Provinces Act of 1989. Clause 11 of the bill contains a consequential amendment to item 23 of Schedule 1 of the Electoral Act. Then clauses 12, 14, 15, 16, 17, 19, 20, and 21 contain consequential amendments to the Local Government Municipal Structures Act. Clause 13 and 18 also amend that act. Clauses 22 and 23 seek to repeal sections 12 and 13 of the Local Government Municipal Structures Act 2002, as those sections will become redundant once floor crossing has been abolished. So far, I think, and even so, when the members start to go through the bills, they will see that all these amendments are of a very technical nature. No principle, I don't want to say no principle change, but it's merely seeking to revert the situation to prior 2002. Then the amendments in the General Laws Amendment Bill that do not relate to floor crossing are, first of all, clause 2 that seeks to be, or seeks to amend section 5.4, emanating from a proposed new section 6B, which is to be inserted in the Funding Act by clause 5. Clause 3A, which makes it clear that all political parties are accountable to the Electoral Commission.
It's Johan, is that right? Johan, yeah. Johan, we're on page 3 of the text of the General Laws Bill, is that right? Right now. Oh, you've got a different version? Oh. Now, actually, I just want members to know where we are. So, in other words, you're saying that the clause is not entirely relevant, or not irrelevant at all, to floor crossing are to be found in the General Laws Bill, and they would be, in the first instance, clause 2, which is on page 3, and then clause 3A. Is that right?
is a part of Clause 7, Jefferson. So it's basically 2, 3, 5, 6, and 7. The whole of 7 or one part of 7 is not relevant to flow crime. That will only be the unaligned part of Jefferson.
Okay, yeah, I suspect that. Okay, we understand you now.
And then Clause 6, as I said, the whole Clause 6 is not applicable to floor crossing. The whole Clause 5 is not applicable to floor crossing. Clause 2, a certain part of that clause is applicable, but the rest of the clause is not. But and then the other one I said is Clause 3. None of that is, that whole clause is not applicable.
Approved by the NCLP, which the NCLP can only do after it has
Section 75 vote. Chairperson Lin, just for this committee's information, in terms of the Funding Act, the President acting on the recommendation of the Joint Committee of the National Assembly and the NCOP may make regulations regarding the funding of political parties under the Funding Act. Now, the abolition of floor crossing will require amendments to the regulations made under that Act. We have already prepared amending regulations, which were submitted to the Electoral Commission for their comment, for its comment, which I received sometime last week. We're busy evaluating, and once we have evaluated, we will then table those amending regulations in Parliament. Then a joint committee will have to be established to consider and make recommendations as far as the amending regulations are concerned to the President. Chairperson, then only two more aspects. The General Laws Amendment Bill affects or amends six different acts, which are administered by three different cabinet members, namely the Minister of Home Affairs, the Minister of Provincial and Local Government, and the Minister for Justice and Constitutional Development. In view thereof, the question has arisen whether it should not be feasible if the three portfolio committees should not jointly participate in the deliberations on and motion of the bills, because this committee is now going to amend legislation which falls within the ambit of other portfolio committees. That is just something for this committee to consider. Chairperson, then lastly, as far as comments are concerned, we have received, I think, about six or seven submissions as a result of the publication of the Constitution Amendment Bills in the Golden Gazette. All these submissions support the abolition of floor crossing. The Electoral Commission, however, has raised concerns regarding certain provisions or certain amendments. I am in the process of preparing a document in which I summarize all the comments, as well as the ones that are the one of ITASA and I think the three other submissions. I will distribute that document tomorrow morning in the committee chambers. Thank you. That's all from my side.
That gather the Catholic Bishops Council's representative is the ITASA will in fact not be able to make it today. So we will see. I think the majority of us feel they should be allowed to come tomorrow, but we will speak to JG after this meeting. Okay. Having said that, questions from members on the, we haven't gone line by line, but the concepts and ideas late.
Thank you, Chair. In principle, of course, the DA will be supporting this bill, or these bills. You will maybe recall that Dr. Delport introduced the private members bill very well, with the same aim. I think it was the end of 2006. Mr. Fananova also introduced one, actually, I think the week before Dr. Delport, so I believe the IFP will also support this bill. I just want one or two questions for clarification. The first one is the ward councillors are on a slightly different position than ordinary other elected people on lists. So I just wanted to know whether consideration was given or to look at them maybe some other way as they are elected individually. And then the other question is whether it was considered to put in some sort of safety valve in the system, because what will now happen is that we have an election and then for 5 years, come what may, position cannot change. Now, I mentioned to Dion earlier in the when the Second World War broke out in this very same chamber, change occurred because the ruling party then did not receive the majority to declare war. So I was wondering whether you did consider safety valves of some sort. I haven't applied my mind to it myself, but I just thought it must be something like that. Thank you.
No, you mean the possibility that some limited exceptional condition in which floor crossing can happen?
Something that was not foreseen in an election, like a World War situation, I guess. And
you very much, Chair. It was very kind of Mr. My colleague here to have decided to determine that the IP will support the bill. The IP most certainly will support the bill, which is why we submitted it in the first place. We don't see the necessity to have any floor crossing, not even in the state of emergency. We believe it is totally immoral and cannot accept and will not accept any floor crossing. We believe that these bills are absolutely essential, and we will support them wholeheartedly.
Seeing as we're putting party political positions as the ACDP, we told you so. Eunice, together with yourself, you remember you said as well at the stage, opposed it and participated in the constitutional court challenges. But Chair, yes, obviously we welcome the bills prohibiting floor crossing, and particularly the one constitutional amendment of the NCOP delegates that we bore the brunt of as well in the Western Cape, where we lost delegates through no fault of our own. So we particularly welcome that. Could I just ask, as far as why it's 14 and 15 separate bills, obviously you touched on it, it's the process, the procedure of having to go through the NCOP bill. It's regrettable that we have to have two constitutional amendments, but I think that it's because of the process, I would think. Have we considered one bill? What are the implications of that? But I would presume the answer is because of the process. So thank you for that, Chair.
I can reply to the letter and say, you can cross the floor without physically doing so. Take Steve to us now. On the child justice bill, was there any difference of value and principle in what he was saying and what ANC was saying? So, you know, it can happen then. But obviously, yeah, but you can not resign and also you can be a comrade at least on one bill, and certainly comrade Steve Swart was certainly around. But so was Len. But anyway, go ahead, Jesse.
Len was in a different party. Len was in a different party.
Yeah,
yes, I'll make it a number of times. No, look, I think the issue is if you look at the where parties were standing with the original debates. I mean, Chair, you chaired that ad hoc committee. I think it was actually only the IFP that has kept its position. Even the ACDP is now saying, we told you so. But I think in the initial debate, had a different position, wanted some form of floor crossing. That's my recollection. It's something that has been determined, I think, by the political terrain. But Chair, having said all that, and I think a number of the questions, I mean, well, obviously the department can answer and things. Obviously, in the example that Mr. Joubert refers to, safeguards, I mean, in that particular case where the government of the day didn't have power, didn't have a majority, I mean, the House can dissolve itself. So if majorities change, then that's one safeguard. I don't know what else you can do. I think the one issue for me would be the question of mergers. And if everybody in a party agrees that they want to join another party, should we be making some provision for that? In other words, the partially the new national party scenario. I say partially because not every member of the new national party after the 2004 decided to join the ANC. One, a certain Honourable Stan Simmons decided to remain and form his own party. So if you don't allow for, I mean, I suppose the problem with allowing for mergers is you've then got to accommodate that situation, and then you have floor crossing parties effectively being formed. So I suppose that's something to look at, but I mean, it's a question, I suppose, of if, and given that we're under pressure to pass this, and it's got to go through, particularly the 14th bill, got to go through the full provincial legislature process, is there a simple way of doing it? Could we put in a clause that does provide for, if everybody in a party wants to join another party, that party can do so. Otherwise, you would still have the new national party sitting here in parliament. support constitutional amendment bills, there's no issue. Nobody is looking briefly at all the submissions. Nobody's actually raising anything. Catholic Bishops Conference want to come and talk. Idasa, you say you want to let them come and talk tomorrow. But nobody's actually saying anything different. The key thing really is the General Laws Amendment Bill and the issues relating to party funding. And I think that it's a pity that we can't have this document, because we are, as you know, under time pressure. We had 2 days allocated to this bill. We're only going to get the document from Mr. Lobuskafni tomorrow. But I think the questions for me would be and it's a pity also that the IEC are not coming here. They're the only people making any submissions of substance. So I suppose the question of why are they not coming. But then, having looked briefly at their submissions, I think the thing I'd be interested in is, why are we abolishing 16A of the Electoral Act, Electoral Commissions Act? That's the section which provides for parties to change their name. Why are we taking that away? What's the point of that? And then they raise a whole lot of issues that I'm still sort of grappling to follow with relating to party funding. Maybe we can get a written document tomorrow, but verbally, can we have what are the issues? I don't know whether they have been covered by the new clause 6B that's being inserted, but I think that's really the nub, and those are the issues that we need to be applying our mind to. So I suppose, Chair, in short, I suppose the first question was more an academic one. Probably, yes, we can pass a clause allowing for mergers, but probably not at this stage, looking at heads being shaken and things like that. Maybe it's something to put in the report to Parliament that this issue needs to be looked at. So let's scrap that question. But can we have, why has Clause 6A of the Electoral Commission Act, why is that being abolished for parties to change their names? And what is the response to the IEC input on the party funding issue?
Explain to those of you who are here from the public, you making a presentation. You can also speak in a moment if you want to clarify any issues. Okay, over then to Johan to reply.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, to come to Mr. Hidra's questions. We did not consider a specific or different procedure for the election of ward councillors. As I mentioned, we intend to revert back to the situation prior to 2002. In other words, they will be elected as they were elected prior to 2002. My colleagues from DPLG can assist me if that answer does not satisfy Mr. Hubert. Then, as far as the health or safety mechanism is concerned, we have not considered such a thing, because the decision was floor crossing should be abolished. So you must either, we went from the premises that we abolish without sort of taking a middle way or provide for certain exceptions. Mr. Swart,
DPRC, do you want to add anything on the first part of Mr. Lynn's question? Question one of, what about ward councillors? Do you want to add anything? Fani, Myron, whoever?
Chairperson, if you look at clause 13 of the General Laws Amendment Bill, paragraph B, that deals with the issue. And I think it's fairly clear that if a ward councillor changes political affiliation, he loses his seat. Why is it? It's clause 13B, isn't it? Yes. Right at the bottom. And it's fairly clear that if a ward councillor changes political party, to lose his membership, or her membership.
Yes, thank you, Chair. What happens in practice, and it happened here in Table Bay, is that the member was the ward councillor was elected for a certain political party. He then resigned as councillor. There was a by-election. He stood for another party in the by-election in which he elected. So I think maybe the solution is in that. Thank you.
All
crossing, then ward councillors could cross at a particular during the window.
Yeah.
That window is being abolished, so they will not be able to cross.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is...
Now our current position.
For the final resolution.
Okay, fine. Then the next thing is, on the issue of exceptional conditions, Lynn, do you want to add anything more? Because JJ has, in a way, replied to you. Okay, so then we go on to Steve. Why not one bill, which is a question I was also going to ask. And I'm a bit confused why you have to have consequential amendments in the 15th Amendment bill that flow from what you've done in the 14th Amendment bill. Now, it's partly because when I participated here in our committee, we only looked at the local government aspect, you'll recall. Well, Myron was there, but Fani might have been. So we weren't concerned about the other issues. So maybe it's a very simple answer. But it's exactly that. Why not one bill?
Thank you, Jefferson. Section 74.5 of the Constitution, 74.3. And the rules of Parliament. And I think the joint rules of the National Assembly also clearly provide that the Constitution Amendment Bill that needs to be passed by both houses may not or cannot contain amendments which only need to be passed by one house. So that's another reason for the two bills.
Chair, just.
Last week of June. Can you tell me what exactly you voted for, besides pressing the green button? Okay. I've been happily in public enterprises, and so the Constitution hasn't intruded on us. Okay, so there we are, exposed. Okay, now then, where do we go? We go to the next question, which is mergers should be allowed. Drop that.
Good point,
JJ. I like it.
Yeah.
It should go in the report. Are we agreeing on that?
Report.
Okay. On name changes, that's a very good question. I must say, I independently thought of it too. Why can't you change your name? Because the ANC might become communist, and then we just don't have to go to elections. We can just become South African Communist Party in Parliament, and I can be the leader of government business. I mean, why do you want to give me all these troubles, John? Not a joke. It's not a joke. You can laugh. Anyway, who won in Nepal? Who won in Cyprus recently? Okay.
Jefferson has passed the repeal of Section 16A of the Electoral Commission Act. Name change is concerned. The Constitution inserted item 23 capital A in Schedule 2 of the interim constitution, which dealt with elections. Now, in that item 23 A, only a small one subsection or one sub item dealt with the change of name of a political party. All the other sub items deal with floor crossing. And we then thought, because it's that part or that sub item for part of the whole floor crossing item that it relates to floor crossing, the Electoral Commission however pointed out to us that is not the case. And the party should be allowed to change its name at any time. And we as the department, after having considered the issue, agree with that viewpoint. So that is one amendment that this committee will have to effect, is to delete clause 1 of the General Laws Amendment Bill.
You're the executive, we're Parliament. You can't instruct us to.
No.
Yeah, what you mean is you're suggesting it to us. Okay, we are ourselves independently saying the same thing, if I guess.
I think that to rephrase the thing is the department or the ministry doesn't have any opposition to retaining 6A, 16A, and therefore deleting clause 1 of this bill.
So we're agreeing on that already. Great. Everybody agrees, right?
the other one is more complicated to follow, so difficult to follow. So
this is the IT input and party funding, your third point.
Yeah.
Can you respond to that?
Jefferson, yes. As far as the funding is concerned, as I said, that at present there are three scenarios where a political party has to repay its unspent balances. The first one is when it ceases to qualify in terms of section, then it has to repay in terms of section 5.4 of the Funding Act. The second one is in terms of section 9.1 of the Funding Act. At the end of every financial year, a political party is allowed to carry over the unspent balances or its unspent balances, except it may not carry over more than 50% of its initial allocation for that financial year. And the third scenario is before an election, all political parties in National Assembly and provinces have to repay their unspent balances before elections. Now what the clause 5 of the General Laws Amendment Bill, we propose the insertion of a new section 6B, which caters for the instance where a political party has to repay when it ceases and before elections. It's a long and cumbersome process. The ET, Electoral Commission, the authority to appoint auditors to verify the statements and accounts of political parties. The Electoral Commission is of the view that the two scenarios where political party has to repay at the end of the financial year, every financial year, and where it has to repay before an election, those two scenarios should be abolished. They feel that there is no principle therefore, and that in the past they have given me statistics, I think only once or twice a political party had to repay, so the Electoral Commission is of the view that those provisions does not serve any purpose anymore. But they, as far as the repayment when a political party ceases is concerned, there they feel that the party should be given, since the moment when it ceases to qualify, it should within 6 months close its books and records of account and then repay the unspent balances. The reason why they give 6 months is that party may have certain obligations, for example, expenses as far as office and personnel is concerned, or are concerned, and therefore the Electoral Commission feels that the party must be given the opportunity to sort of settle all those accounts and then thereafter repay the remaining unspent balances. That is, in short, the concerns. They feel that the provision in the new proposal is section 6B is far too cumbersome, and I think they also use the word expensive. Then another concern of the Electoral Commission is that they feel that we should not, or let's put it this way, the amendments in clause 7. The amendments in clause 7, or the proposed amendment, makes the failure to comply with certain obligations in terms of the Act an offence, where if the accounting officer or the leader of the leader of the political party, for example, fails to have close the records and the records of and books, or when he or she fails to submit an audited statement to the Electoral Commission, that is an offence. Now, the Electoral Commission is of the view that we should not make those kind of failures an offence, because they feel that it's more financial obligations and it shouldn't be criminalised. That is, in short, what the views of the Electoral Commission as far as the General Laws Amendment Bill is concerned.
What is the
Well, Jefferson, those amendments seek to give effect to the resolution that was adopted by this committee, and that we merely, by still those amendments, gave effect to the resolution of this committee. So, personally, I feel that it's for this committee to decide whether we should retain the situation as it is at present, or whether they still want to go with the
Presumably, the resolution is in FC8. Is that correct? This ATC one, it's 19th of August. Because I think what we need to do... Look, you know, I'm having some difficulty following this section. I don't understand... I mean, having a look at the IEC submission, you know, they talk about there were only two... On the first one, repayment of unspent funds on the day before the elections following the dissolving of Parliament. In the history of the fund, only on two occasions could be found where a party was obliged to pay and did repay unspent balances to the funds under this provision. It was 28,000 in the one and 2,000 in the other. Now, fine, but, you know, if you didn't have this provision, what would happen to the 28,000? You know, why should that sit in some party's bank account when it's not entitled? So I'm not following that. Why there's a problem with that. But, Chair, I really think the IEC need to come here. I mean, how can we, if they're going to raise practical problems, and it seems that an element of what these amendments they want are practical, they need to come and engage with us on that. So I really think that Jing, if there is a tea break, I don't know if we established.
You don't need a tea break, I'm probably to ring them now.
Phone to say they will come here.
Do that now. But can I read something else that I'm teetering towards saying, having not thought it through yet? It's not a view, but we must think about this. We have to pass this bill this week. People have been sent the horrendous program we have this next 6 weeks. Just quickly to remind those of you who don't know, we have to pass both bills this week. The customary succession bill, which we haven't even begun with beyond the public hearings, and this bill. Next week, Tuesday to Friday, we have got public hearings on the DSO bills. The week thereafter, as you know, you've been told, Lolly's told you, 11th to 15th, we're in the provinces on the DSO bills. Then we come back. Now, the aim is that we have a 3-day sitting of the House in the third week of August, from Tuesday to Thursday. In those 3 days, we have to have 2/3 majority there for at least one of the days, maybe the Wednesday, DJ. So we have to vote on this bill. Now, having said all of that, I'm guided by those of you who were in the committee in 2005. And let's not do what happened to the Child Justice Bill. This is merely 2 years ago. If that was your view in 2005, then what's happened since then to change your views? Secondly, let's bring the IEC in. But the third thing is I want to say is that maybe we just excise all these things. Because we have to bring in the Home Affairs Committee. We cannot, Dion, we cannot pass. Whose bill is the Funding Act? Does it fall within our committee or the Home Affairs Committee? No, we can't pass this section unless Home Affairs agrees. It is ours. Or then we can do it, and we can do it. Or I'm relieved that we can do it. Because there's no way this committee will pass a bill. We've said this 1,000 times to the committees that I've chaired, which impacts on another committee without their fullest engagement. But we'll come back to your proposal about all three committees sitting on other aspects of this bill. So in short, one of the options may be, if it's too complicated and complex, if there isn't enough consensus in this committee, that let's leave this for the incoming committee, you know, next year to handle it. It's not the end of the world. Or are there some issues that will impact because we're going to have elections soon? I don't know. I don't think so. But let's start with that. If we decide, not that I'm saying we do this, but it's worrying me really how complex it might be technically, not politically. Just I want to ask you, if we were not to go ahead with these sections, including the Funding Act and so on, they're not immediately relevant or relevant to the program. Would it have any negative implications for the forthcoming elections?
Chairperson, I can't think of any implications, but maybe that's a question that the IEC should also be asked. Perhaps they can think of something else, but because I said that those sections does not or do not relate to floor crossing, it merely addresses or address the matters raised in the resolution of the committee. But maybe the IEC might think of something else.
We're doing exactly that. We're getting the IEC. Can I suggest that if we can finish this section, let's finish it. We should seek to
ourselves and do something. We would like to have the IEC and the department agree. So the IEC is part of, if you like, the state. And they know about elections. And, you know, it's like SELGA and local government. You want to have SELGA as far as possible agree. So, in short, let's keep that option. But our first priority is to finish. JJ, you want to say a few things?
Look, the pressure is for the constitutional amendments, particularly the 14th, because that's got to go through the NCOP or through provincial legislatures. So we could pass those. And this general laws amendment, we in fact would have until September to pass. So we don't have to, I mean, I think it's ideal in terms of debating time in the houses and things like that to say, we'll do them all together, but in fact we can separate them. We can finalise constitution amendments this week and let the general laws amendment stand over. It's a section 75 bill. It will take a shorter time, but I think that I missed the point on the Home Affairs Committee because I thought the funding of parties was a Home Affairs matter, not okay. But anyway. You know, it gives time, but maybe if we can get the IEC tomorrow, we can then see how we go on it.
You know, in your memorandum, I think, and what you said, it's not correct, because they've been talking with the department is of the integrated, interrelated nature of all three bills. They come as a package. Well, they don't, actually. If what JJ is saying is correct, we can pass the first two, and we can pass the third later. So in that sense, it's a package. But as far as the timing goes, we don't have to all vote on all three bills together. Let's just hear the department
on that. They are a package because it's consequential matters in the general law. What I'm saying is that so you can't have the president signing the constitutional amendment into law and the other one, general law amendment, not being passed. But in terms of the parliamentary procedure, as long as they all end up at the same time,
Is there anything else members want to raise about the conceptual issues? No. Now, those of you who are here from civil society to make representations, either written you've done or orally you're going to do, do you want to ask any questions for clarity? There are very few of you here, I suspect. No. Okay, then let's hand over to Catholic Bishops' Conference. Can I suggest, before we do though, can I raise a few quick questions? I haven't asked anything beyond just supplementing. One is, I think members know the program for the next 6 weeks. Okay. Lolly, where's Bonani? He's not here. Okay. Then the next thing is, we got the 2005 report. The other problem would be, for especially somebody like me, but probably for all of us, is how do we know that all the consequential amendments, technical though they may be, are actually being effected in what you've got? Who's going to be able to check? You're saying it's 6 other bills affected, 3 departments. So who, Suez, is going to check that they haven't forgotten inadvertently, of course, you know. Where's the lawyers from Parliament? Are they here? Who's here? Ah, there you are. Of course you are. Some, can we meet at lunchtime or whatever? We need to actually check that, you know, maybe you've slipped up because you're human. I'm just saying you're not human, but I mean, you know, you're great, but you're human, right? Now, we have to do our job. Who's going to do that, JJ? Let's think about that. Then the next thing is, the cross-referencing is easier because we must check that they have, when they're referring to, in these three bills to other bills, that it's the correct section that they're cross-referencing to, right? Did you leave anything out? Oh, that's covered, right? Process-wise now, you know, I really think bringing all three committees together under the duress of time constraints is not going to be easy. I don't know, JJ, I think what we do is we proceed with the bills. We were hoping to vote on the bills this week. Can I just finish? One proposal I've got, JJ, is let's proceed. I inform Lachisa and Patrick Chowke that before we vote on the bill, we'll call the three committees together or the chairs and whips together and the opposition members together and sit in like a management committee of three committees so that we have consensus on what we've done. But I phone them today. Where's Lottie's got? Who's going to remind me? Sue, you're responsible for this bill from the research unit. Can you remind me? I must follow up and phone the chairperson of local government and the chairperson of Home Affairs. JJ, on process?
I was just going to say that the speaker in the ATC refers the bill to a committee or committees and puts conditions. Committee must consult with another committee. referred these bills to the Justice Committee. So there's no obligation to formally sit jointly. I would have thought, given the time constraints, that it would be sufficient, at least with the two constitution amendments bills, that you contact the chairs of those portfolio committees and find out what they want to do. I see provincial and local government are, I think, having hearings tomorrow on some bills that they've got. They may not really be that interested or have that amount of time. I mean, it's not as if the constitutional amendments are particularly contentious. Nobody has come up with anything, you know. So that's what I'm suggesting. Rather than say, no, the study groups or the joint committees will meet, discuss with the chairs, maybe on the party funding, because it involves the IEC, maybe Home Affairs would be more interested. But also let that be up to the call of the chair.
Yes. Serve on Home Affairs, and I don't remember them ever being part of the deliberations on floor costing or the funding bill that we had. I'm sure they might want to, but I don't remember, even when we did the consequential bills to deal with funding, the report comes via the Justice. It falls under the Justice budget. The funding comes out of our budget at all, but I'm sure as a matter of courtesy you might want to know. As a matter of fact, Home Affairs is sitting tomorrow on a workshop for the rest of the week on the Forms and Publications Bill, so they are already tied up with another issue.
Okay. They can maybe send one person if they want, that sort of thing. But I think I agree with what JJ and Steve Stewart are saying. Okay, then the next thing is, you know, in a way, this also raises the issue of electoral systems. You know, it's something we may want to consider in the report, that by considering the issue of floor crossing, invariably, though we don't want to confront it, it's also raising the issue of what is an appropriate electoral system for South Africa. I mean, there are people who feel we should do in national and provincial spheres what we have in local government. You know, a combination of ward, cum, constituency and list systems. There are also people who feel we should have multi-member constituencies. I think the Fabian's report, I think, proposed that and so on. So I think we might want to consider in our report to Parliament to say that even if there is a strong view that if you retain the current system, that we must be creative and times change. And in fact, this very bill communicates that point. So we should also, every few years, look at the electoral system. There are a multiplicity of systems we can adopt, you know, which also ensure representativity and inclusivity. I mean, it's great that we, I think, decided in 94 that even if you get 0.25% of the vote, you can have one seat in Parliament to be inclusive. But it's 14 years down the road. We can still be inclusive without necessarily having this system. So we might in our report want to say something. We'll keep them all over that. The submissions from the public to the gazetted versions of the bills, Johan, that is that more or less exactly the same as the submissions we received, or are there any additional ones, which we'd like to see anyway?
Chairperson, I have distributed all the submissions that we received as a result of the publication. As I said, all of them support the abolition. It was only the IEC that has these additional comments.
Okay, as for the submission that came to our committee, there'll be very little work to do. It's just one table, with very little. I mean, if people are whinging and whining about, I told you so sort of thing, that's fine. We can just note that. But it's not possible. I don't think we need to sit for very long today, actually. But we could possibly, if possible, without putting pressure on you, it's nice to get something tonight. Because then tomorrow we move fast. You know, clause by clause. The way we operate, I think, you haven't been here in committees that, well, I don't know, I think the previous committee also said, we look at each clause and say, that what the public say, as we don't vote, we don't informally adopt a clause unless we've seen what the public has said on a specific clause. So we won't be able to proceed clause by clause unless we get that table. So maybe we look into this afternoon. And to facilitate that, it would be more productive if we ended sooner today and gave you more time. Finish, and then we will get Lolly to email it to all of you and SMS you. Well, Lolly's not here. Suman, can you just note these things in the absence of Lolly and Bonani? But he's not here. Oh, you know, it's your job. You're supposed to note all these things, right? So, I don't know who Sir is, but I take it you're referring to me. Okay, public comment on bill. We said, where's Home Affairs? Oh, right, we've discussed that. All three committees have discussed that. Okay, good. Let's move on. Yeah?
Just unfortunately, the documents are mixed up. So we've got a combination of
before. You are their parliamentary liaison officer.
That's more or less correct, Chairperson. Mike Posse is my name. I'm research.
You did your copy of the Child Justice Bill before we voted on it.
That's correct.
Yeah. You were reasonably okay with it.
Yes.
You know, we said no to you on two things. But I must tell you that there was overwhelming sympathy with your concerns, but we just felt it not on. But anyway, we can talk outside this meeting. Go ahead, please. 10-15 minutes, will that do you?
I think that's more than enough.
Okay, good. Okay, the submission is here with us, isn't it? It's number what? Who's got it? Number one? 16. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chief.
Because others don't know you.
Yeah, my name's Mike Pothier. I'm Research Director for the Catholic Parliamentary Liaison Office. I want to just preface what we say in our submission by noting, I can't speak on behalf of the whole of civil society, but it's a bit disturbing that it appears there are only two civil society groups that have asked to address the committee, ourselves and Didata. Because when floor crossing was introduced, civil society, particularly those organizations like ourselves that are interested in issues of governance and accountability and democracy, were up in arms against it. We felt then, we feel now, that it was a very bad idea. And I would have expected far more organizations to be present here to welcome the scrapping of these provisions. I think it's important, and it's been a principle that our office has adhered to for 11 years since we started, that we don't come to Parliament only to moan and complain and object to what government or Parliament is doing. We must come as well as civil society to support and to commend and to encourage the good things, and this is certainly one of those things. Nevertheless, Chairperson, we've set out, I think, quite briefly our reasons for supporting this legislation. Many politicians, I think, came to the conclusion over the years of floor crossing, and particularly around the window period, that the public at large took a very dim view of what was going on. It became a spectacle, and it has done no good at all for the reputation of our democratic institutions and of the political class in general. And as the memorandum to the bill makes clear, there's been a groundswell of opposition, and it's very encouraging to find that, first of all, government and indeed the ruling party, which has itself benefited from floor crossing, has been prepared to bring forward this legislation for its scrapping. That's the kind of responsiveness and accountability that we in civil society are always calling for and always very happy to see happening. I think that when we return here next week to address you on the DSO bills, we are of course going to be saying something different there in terms of responsiveness. But that's the nature of politics. You win and you lose. As civil society, we win and lose, and I suppose you as politicians also win and lose some of them. I'm going to move right to the end of our submission, because I think it's quite clear that all parties represented here are in favour of this legislation. I think civil society is in favour. I see that from the submissions, the provincial legislatures that have made responses are themselves in favour. So I think one can more or less draw a line under it at that point. But you yourself raised the question of electoral reform, and in a way that's, for us, the more important part of this whole process. Simply to go back to the situation prior to 2002 is not good enough.
coming here, apart from commending the scrapping of the system, is to say, please don't stop at that point. Please apply your minds to, if it be the Slobbert Commission's report or any other investigation that may have happened in South Africa, and of course then comparatively with countries all over the world which have these systems, please investigate them and at some point engage with civil society on what the possibilities are, what's practical for our context in South Africa, for the position at which our electorate finds itself, what is practical in terms of the cost implications perhaps and so on. But we really do need something more responsive, more accountable, which closes the gap that exists, the distance that exists between the electorate on the one hand and our public representatives on the other. So we welcome this scrapping, but it would be a great pity if we were still sitting here in 5 years' time with no progress having been made on electoral reform as a whole. Thank you, Chairperson.
Maybe it's something that we need to consider ourselves as a committee, something that we don't really look at, and that is, what is our role as constitutional development? We've got the justice side, but do we ever look at constitutional development? And just to tie on with what the submission was at the end, to look at the issue of electoral reform that you looked at and that you referred to as well, clearly that is something that maybe there are time constraints. We want to look at this floor cost, but that is something that we need to look at in general. And possibly I could ask Advocate Pothier if he could maybe prepare us some submissions on what his views are on electoral reform. We've got the Fund Sales Slobbert Commission's report that you referred to earlier, and maybe we, together with the Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs, can at some stage look at that whole issue. It's just a comment from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Questions.
All right, maybe that's the main issue I want to ask you. My personal views are not necessarily opposed to yours. I'm just saying, when you say there's a groundswell of opinion to change the system, where do you get that from? Would you reply?
I think, first of all, there's that sort of informal network of civil society organizations that have been working in and around Parliament for a number of years, and again, I mentioned people like IDASA and ourselves, and SA Council of Churches, etc. And certainly in our various discussions and, you know, the seminars and the conferences and so on, I think that there's been a growing acknowledgement that whereas the pure PR system was the correct thing when we started in 94, and there were very good reasons and sound reasons why that was necessary, time has come to explore the possibility of moving on and adapting in a way that, to borrow that phrase that I put in my submission, meets the changed political terrain. We have an electorate now which has been through three general elections, fourth one next year, a number of municipal elections and so on. People in general are getting much more familiar with the whole question of voting and what it means and how it works than was previously the case. I think that we've also experienced, and I say we as civil society organizations, pick up the complaints of people, be they ordinary people or people, for example, in the media or working in community organizations and that sort of thing, that they feel that there's a certain lack of responsiveness when you're doing civic education type of work. And you're talking to people about members of parliament. One of the questions that often comes up, well, who's my member of parliament? You have to say, well, officially, you don't have a member of parliament. You may very well have a person from the ruling party who has a constituency or an informal constituency in your area, but that's not the same thing as having a member of parliament. And again, we know only one party has the reach to have effective constituencies around the country. So, groundswell, I think that I don't have scientific evidence. I don't know whether specific surveys have been done on this sort of thing. IDASA may be in the best position to address that question. But I think it's perfectly clear that there's a level of dissatisfaction, certainly from people who are working in the same community organizations, NGOs and so on, who have a mature understanding or a developed understanding of electoral systems and electoral politics. And they're saying, well, we'd like something more. And they're aware of the systems in other countries, in Germany, for example, in Ireland, etc., etc., and they're saying, well, let us have a discussion about bringing in something like that here. I don't think it would be for any of us in civil society to claim that there was one perfect system or that we knew what it was. But we'd all have certain ideas about the results that we want from an electoral system. And if I can link that to a reply to the question around the correct place for such submissions to be made. Yes, the Constitutional Review Committee would be one such place, but I would suggest that this question is such a wide-ranging one and one that should involve so much public input that it deserves a special inquiry of its own. Now, again, you have the Slobbert Commission, which worked at a certain high level. I'm thinking of something more like in the days of the Constitutional Assembly, where there was a roadshow that went around to town halls and municipalities and so on and gave the ordinary people, the ordinary voter, the opportunity to have their say. I can't see why it would be that difficult to organize such a roadshow, which put forward three or four simple examples of electoral reform and just sought people's opinions and views on those. And then that could all be sorted up through civil society organizations, through political parties themselves, through Constitutional Review Committee, etc., etc. But I would defend the statement that there's a groundswell, but I cannot give you, scientific percentages and so on.
I didn't sort of expect you to deliver scientific. You know what I think, for what it's worth, we must agree to disagree. See, you're talking about the NGO elites, you know, who think that, and I know they do. Many of them are among comrades. Actually, it surprises me there isn't such a groundswell of opposition, really. If there was, the majority party would be under more pressure, I suspect. Actually, I don't think there is a groundswell. I think people, this is my view. I'm not romanticizing the masses. But on the other hand, I'm not, well, I don't know. committee and I represent a party, and you're going to say, you see now, Eunice, you are, in the way you're replying, illustrate my point. But there's also majority discussions within the party. Let me say, actually, I'm acutely aware that elites within the NGOs feel that way. And I understand and empathize, and often agree with some, not all, that you say. I actually don't think there's a groundswell of opinion. That's my view. I could be wrong. I have no empirical basis. You're going to throw it back at me and say, what's your basis? I don't think there is a groundswell. I think what people are more concerned about is delivery. I don't really particularly care what the technical system is. They just want access to their MPs. I also think, you know, it doesn't follow. And in our own party, or let's say generally, each party will say the same. In local government, it's often, well, it's questionable whether it's always the case, and I'm putting it mildly, that the ward constituency local government councillor is more active and effective and productive and delivering than the PR person. Us, JJ. Both of us will tell you. And you know one example I'm talking about, Imnam Beatty, right? There was an MP that used to, well, still does stay very far away from that constituency. And he fought and fought that the local people should have their own MP. Because that area, 60% voted for the ANC. Well, they did get their local MP. But they went, the people there kept wanting to go back to the MP living 1.5 hours away by car. They refused to accept the local MP. And the local MP is now gone to the other end of the province. Yet she speaks Zulu, as against the other MP that was deployed there from very far away. She is in the legislature, as against the other MP who's in the National Assembly. She, I can recite a whole lot of things. It doesn't follow. The problem also is that in the meanwhile, we can, maybe, without impinging on Home Affairs, say that we think Parliament should do more to ensure, while we have the current system, that MPs are accountable. Each party does its own thing. But Parliament as a whole, JJ, has put no set of rules. Is that correct? That bind all of us, whichever party we come from. All that has happened, if I'm correct, is our details, which are never updated, presumably, are on a website. You know? But beyond that, Parliament doesn't. Can we think about this? Parliament should make it necessary. Beyond each party and its own set of internal disciplines. Shall we consider this? Are we impinging on Home Affairs? That we might couch it. Where's Suan? Suan, you're there, right? Remember, your job is to also assist us to do the report. We might carefully and gingerly and without treading on anybody's toes say Parliament should consider the, you know, some, why we have the current system, some greater degree or rules or norms or whatever to ensure greater accountability. But also, to reply to you, Mike, you know, at the end of the day, you know, democracy doesn't just reside in having your own elected MP. It also consists in other forms of active participation, permissible. In the area of local government, we have ward committees, we have school governing forums, we have community police forums, and we have a plethora of other institutions where the public can get involved. And it works both ways. The state's not doing enough to create the space or the resources for that to happen, but the public itself, where you do create space, and many of us who are activistic MPs will tell you, is not wonderfully activistic either. You yourself said only now that you would have thought more people would come to Parliament to participate in these public hearings, and we were also taken aback at how few of you have decided to come. And I'm talking of the elite, those who can come. You know, the rank and file are not going to come from Bull and Lele or wherever. Yeah. Okay, having said all that, I think we don't disagree. I think he's right, DJ. It shouldn't just be the Constitutional Review Committee. They may lead such a thing, but we should have a public engagement over the next 2 years or so after the elections. I don't want to say more. I think I'm taking too much time. Carol, do you want to say anything? You don't want to say anything. Okay. Having said that, can we then move to Constitutional 14 Amendment Bill? Let's start clause by clause and let's adopt what we can. Now, I take it, the department, you've read the submissions that have come, all of them. And there's nothing that impacts on the 14th Amendment from the public, is that correct?
Chairperson, nothing that I've received. Lolly sent me some last week. I don't, except for the one that we dealt with just now, I don't think there's any other one that I haven't seen. So, but I'll quickly, before we adjourn, I'll make sure that they're
and have you read all the submissions that have come from the public? So you would have done that today between you and Jillian and whoever else. I don't know what his role is, but can we have the researchers also read it? The members will read it. So let's start with the Constitutional 14 Amendment Bill. You're going to brief us on each clause, right? Starting on, well, the title is fine. Let's go to clause one.
Just before we proceed with this, as far as the processing of the bill, the Constitution Amendment Bill is concerned, have some doubt in my mind that the Constitution provides that the National Assembly may not vote on Constitution Amendment Bill within 30 days after it has been introduced, if Parliament is sitting when it's introduced, or within 30 days after it's tabling, if it's tabled when Parliament is in recess. Now, Parliament went into recess on the 27th of June this year. We introduced or tabled, I don't know what you read terminology, on the 1st of July. So the question is now, there are different views. Some say because 1st of July Parliament was in recess, that 30 days only start to run when Parliament isn't sitting again, which I assume is today. Some say no, it starts to run from the day that it has been, the bills were tabled, on namely the 1st of July. So far, nobody can give me a clear-cut answer. And seeing that the parliamentary law advisor is here, perhaps he should look at this thing, because why I'm raising this issue, Chairperson, it will serve no purpose if this committee decides to vote or to pass the bills this week, and again, they cannot pass them within, say, another 30 days. So I think it's very important to determine the exact date when that 30 days start to run and when it expires. We don't want to have a procedural defect in these bills by National Assembly voting on the bills within the 30 days.
When was the bill introduced or tabled? Sorry?
That was the 1st of July.
1st of July. So, on the 1st of July, was Parliament in... in recess or in session?
Recess.
So it was a tabling. It was tabled. Okay? So we can't vote for it for 30 days from the 1st of July as the National Assembly. Okay? That's all. I mean, I'm not sure I don't know if I missed something, but I don't see the sort of problem. This committee, it can't be put to the vote in the National Assembly. Okay, this committee can vote on it. But I think it's clear, 74-7, 30 days of its tabling in the Assembly, if the Assembly is in recess. It can't be introduced, can't be put to the vote in the National Assembly within 30 days of its tabling. So if it was in recess, then it was 7B that applies, and the National Assembly can't vote on it until the 1st of August. But the National Assembly is only going to vote on it on the 18th of August or so. So I'm not sure the problem. I mean, I think parliamentary law advisors can look at it, but I don't sort of... I might have missed something.
Comment from you, please. I've forgotten your name. I'm sorry about that, Ruth, but...
Much from state law advisors, and and Mr. Navarro from the parliamentary legal advisors. Yes, Chairperson, we would prefer to have to consult together on this matter, but I think in general, Mr. Jeffrey's is correct. But if the committee wants us to look into it more in depth, we'll certainly do it.
You want a long treatise, we just want an answer tomorrow. Yes, can we do it? No, we can't. Then we'll discuss it. We have to. So you decide and come back to us. I mean, from what JJ says, I'll also look at the Constitution, but I don't see a problem. Carol doesn't see a problem either. Anybody else? Steve, you're a lawyer. Len, you're a lawyer. Have fine. Anybody got any comments about this? By the way, everybody's got a copy of the Constitution, and it's not the 1996 version. It's with all these current amendments. And is that right, Ronnie? It's a later version of the Constitution. It's just got all the amendments here. Because I was looking at the earlier version. Okay, let me have... Yeah, look, basically for now, we informally accept this. Right? Any issues? No? Okay. Then clause 2.
Jefferson amends section 62 of the Constitution by deleting paragraph B of subsection 3. Reason why we delete B, you'll see it contains the reference to 61(2)(b)(2), yeah, which is deleted by clause 1.
Any questions here? Are we in agreement for now? We don't think we shouldn't change our minds after having read it into the early hours of tomorrow morning. Carol has to watch Desperate Housewives, so she can only read. Tony, Sandy. Okay, 5-2 is accepted. 3.
Delete the words subject to Schedule 6, capital A, Jefferson. That schedule,
you have to explain. I mean, it's straightforward. You're smiling. Right. That's progress. Okay. Any questions there? Okay. Are you from the IFP, my friend? You can speak to inform on behalf of your party. Okay, that's fine. Okay. Then we say okay to 3. 4.
Was consequential chairperson again reference to Schedule 6A?
I think 4 is fine. Sue Ann, you're on the ball, eh? Yeah, if there's anything you want to say, or Joe, you know, you come in. Please, okay? 5, so we're agreeing to 4. 5.
Clause 5, Jefferson, 5A is consequential. All the amendments, all the reference to merged parties, and all the provisions relating to floor crossing are being deleted. That's merely again to revert to the decision prior to 2000. That is 5A.
Yeah, I've got a few questions. Okay, Steve, you go.
So the million-dollar question is, what is the meaning of consistent with democracy? As it has been applied in practice, where we had, just to give you a practical example, the last one of the floor crossings, we had two members in existence in a provincial legislature. A new party was then formed. It received two members, and we had an equal... So we then had an equal competing. The principle was then applied, what is consistent with democracy? And it ended up being a vote in the House, where the majority party in that province decided it was consistent with democracy to give that NCOP seat to a newly formed party, as opposed to a party, the ACDP, that had been in existence for 10 years. So that is a problem, a practical problem that was experienced, and the way it was applied party politically. I think we need to engage as to what is meant with consistent with democracy. But I do want to say that I support this provision because it makes it a lot easier, because in the case, had that provision been applied in that circumstances, that newly formed party would have been kicked out because it did not participate in a previous election and therefore did not have votes, which could be in terms of the 2002 provision that we are now returning to. But just to debate around the issue, what is envisaged in the concept of consistent with democracy. That's the first point. Secondly, there's an issue that the previous chairperson and present deputy minister had a concern about, and that is in terms of the legislation governing the NCOP that also that kicks out the implications of the Constitution in certain circumstances, where the formula is applied in terms of the Constitution and it results in a party having more special delegates than permanent delegates, and then it is adjusted. So maybe we just need to have a look at that. Thank you, Chair.
I mentioned that gives effect to the proposal that was made in the National that scenario where two parties or the votes of or two parties recorded the same number of votes during an election, then the delegates must be allocated to, in terms of in a manner which is consistent with democracy. And that's where Mr. Swart's concern now comes in. I think, Jefferson, that consistent with democracy can be interpreted in different manners, but if eventually it's the province, the provincial legislature that will have to then allocate and will have to give a meaning to what consistent with democracy means. And that, again, that is exactly the same with Mr. Swart that was used in 2005 in the Delegates Act.
I fully support this amendment because the chances of this happening are so minimal of two parties having the exact same. The previous, had we returned to what was exactly in 2002, you'd have two surpluses that would compete. In other words, it would be 2 versus 2 or comma 7 versus comma 7. When the delegates here, it goes right down to exact votes parties obtaining in a provincial legislature, and there's almost a no possibility, there's a small possibility that it could happen. And only in those circumstances, then, would the provision of consistent with democracy kick in, and which has been interpreted to mean the House then decides, or the majority party in the provincial legislature, which has been a concern of mine, but I don't know how else one could do it, because that would be the representative of that province, would then decide by vote in the House. If two parties get exactly the same votes, which party then gets the delegate seat to the NCRP? And that's basically the government. So it's actually an improvement on what was the previous situation. It makes it clearer as to the allocation of votes, of delegates.
That's a simple question. Let's say if two parties have the same surplus, it's a percentage of the vote, right? But the actual numbers may differ. So if you say both parties have got a surplus of, let's say, 0.7%, it could mean that Party A has got 545 votes and Party B has got 543 votes. And that's what will determine the literal. That's fair. Now, can I ask you, funny local government, what happened? Didn't we say you toss a coin if you have exactly the same number of votes? Didn't we say there was something, if I remember, that you just toss a coin to decide who would take the ward seat? Isn't that true? Or am I wrong?
I'll have to look at that. Yeah, I can't.
I think we decided there.
Gee, I would say, that would be one of the principles that one fleshes about what is consistent with democracy. And if that is a principle that is applied, I know at local government level where you have a tie, that can help happen. So we've experienced a problem practically with the term, the application, where it has not been to our favor, notwithstanding practically. Let me give you a practical example. The legal advisor advised that the ACDP should get that NCRP seat because we've been in existence for 10 years as opposed to a newly formed party that had no policy or anything. Notwithstanding that, the majority party in the provincial legislature decided that the newly formed party would get the seat. That seemed totally unfair and inconsistent with democracy. We would far prefer a flip of the coin or to make it a fairer. So those are the types of principles as one fleshes out what is consistent with democracy. But the present formulation now is highly unlikely to happen. And in such terms, then one will have to, again, flesh out what is consistent with democracy.
As far as we are concerned, consistent democracy is fine for the Constitution. It's its application in the relevant act that you might have to flesh out for the exceptional circumstances Steve Swart is referring to. Am I following the debate now?
No, Chair, that's a separate issue. That's a separate issue that I need to discuss. The consistent with democracy is applied. Each provincial legislature then adopts what they believe to be consistent with democracy. I don't know.
It differs from one province to another.
Well, that could be so.
But how can that be?
Yeah, I think as far as I'm aware, it comes to a vote in the House of the provincial legislature. No, it's just a rule of practice.
Situation. Another
federal, well, you know, we call the system of cooperative governance, neither federal nor unitary. Let's leave it at that. Now, point is, surely we're not a federal system in the way the U.S. is. Surely, too, there should be a policy on this issue that ensures all provinces understand in that context what consistent with democracy means. Either it's a vote, which personally I am very ill at ease about, though politics being what it is, I have no doubt the ACDP would tell exactly the same thing if they were a majority party and they wanted to set up alliance. They would have done exactly the same thing. I don't know why you're in politics then. But it is not a fair objective system, really. It should be on the number of literal votes you've got. I mean, whoever's got the higher vote should actually get the seat. Moreover, if you're 10 years old and a new party is created, surely it's reasonable to argue that a 10-year-old party should be entitled to that extra seat. But that being said, I'm sure the very same party that's arguing that is very likely to do exactly what the majority party did in that particular context. But that's neither here nor there. This is the constitution. We're going to be objective. We're going to be fair. Now, the question is, surely they should be. Shouldn't Parliament write in our report, we think, consideration has to be given to having a system in this very unusual context that is reasonably consistent throughout the country. Funny, you want to say something?
In terms of the Structures Act, in a ward election, and in the event of two more candidates receiving equal number of votes, the result will be determined by lot.
Apply their minds to it, and we'll come back tomorrow morning. If all goes well, we would like to finish these bills by tomorrow afternoon. But having said that, 14th Amendment bill is over. Let's go to 15th Amendment bill.
Why we deemed it subsection 106, subsection 4. So this is, although it's a new insertion in the Constitution, it's in line with the position as far as National Assembly and provinces are concerned.
Basically, we already have such legislation on how vacancies must be filled, don't we?
The local government is put, structure checks.
Yeah. So we're retrospectively putting in a provision in the Constitution for legislation that's already been passed. You're just being consistent, is that correct?
Yes, Chairperson.
And there's no unintended consequences here.
What? I can't hear.
Because we should have done this in the first instance in 1996 when we adopted the Constitution. That's the point you're making.
I don't know why it was then included in the Schedule 6D dealing with floor crossing, why that schedule contains a similar item. I can show you now it's item Schedule 6B, item. My constitution differs from yours, Jefferson. It's just fun.
Look at what? Schedule 6.
Schedule 6, capital B. It's the last schedule, just before you get it, the law is repealed. Item 8, and it reads as follows. Vacancies in the municipal council must be filled in terms of national legislation. And we've copied those words now into the body of the constitution. Schedule 6, capital B, item 8.
Oh, there it is, yeah. Page 196 of the text we have. Two-thirds way down, no, three-quarters way down, vacancies. Yeah, so all you've done is, because you're removing that whole thing, you're retaining that. Makes sense to me, but JJ is a bit unhappy. You want to say something?
Where is this a technical thing. I mean, is it correct to say this is 6B? I mean, this is actually Schedule 6, Part B.
Yeah, I
thought that too. Because I was looking for you know, when you have a clause, you've got Clause 6 and you've got a Clause 6A, which is an insertion. So I was expecting a entirely new Schedule 6. Would be Schedule 6, there would be a Schedule 6A and a Schedule 6B. But in fact, it's only one Schedule 6, and it's a Part A and a Part B.
Easy to answer, Chairperson. It was incorrectly numbered in the Constitution. Incorrectly numbered, yeah. If you look at the amending Act, it clearly provided 6A and 6B. As the updated Constitution, 6A and capital 6B. The 10th anniversary in...
No, we've got the 10th anniversary and we've got Schedule 6 with a Part A and a Part B. Because on the cover here it's got a little 10th anniversary logo. And then the other thing is you look at the first page where they've got all the amendments, and the amendments go up till 2003. So that's also where you can sort of date the thing. But I've still, this version still has Schedule 6 Part A and Part B.
And Lolly wants me to apologize to her for suggesting she gave us the wrong version. And I formally do that. Where is Suhan? Suhan, will you drop me a letter of apology for us? You've got even a later version than we have.
It's mine. I was fortunate enough to attend something here at the High Court where they distributed these ones. And mine includes the amendments up 2005, the Constitution 12 Amendment. It's not in
that version,
yes. It's not in Mr. Jeffries. But I'm looking for the original amendment.
Alright, but if it's there in the 2005 print, that's the latest one we should have had. And that's fine. Let's leave it as it is. Okay. Next, we taking away Schedule 6B. So the 15th Amendment Bill is adopted. Any questions? No, formally adopted until we hear otherwise. Then we go to general laws. Now here, I want to ask members' advice. We can stop here. I think there's lunch, is that right? Yeah. They can deliver it now. It's a sit down, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's outside, isn't it? Okay. Okay, they don't serve sit down lunch. Are they here already? Okay, do we want to begin this bill, or do we want to start tomorrow? What do members feel? since the lunch may not be here, why don't we begin? I mean, until the lunch comes. Shall we go ahead with... Yeah, okay, let's carry on. Okay, there we are. You're on.
Relevant section of the 15th Amendment Bill, but I'm coming back here. Presumably, any be it enacted goes.
received and qualified audit last year because of certain political parties, particularly newly formed parties, that did not audit their party funds properly and in time. And this resulted in Auditor General giving the IEC a qualified audit. So I think that the powers, and it will be useful to hear from them why they don't want this provision, because in fact it gives them additional oversight powers over political parties that do not comply with very stringent audit requirements in terms of the IEC funds.
Have this power. The fact that it's here may help parties to feel under pressure. What's the big deal? Okay, JT, you got anything to say, Carol?
No, I'm just trying to get to and looking at all the stuff. I mean, I see from what the committee in the 6A that's being repealed, the one about party funding, there was this provision of the commission may appoint a public accountant, an auditor, to verify the auditor's report and audit the statements. And then in the committee report, the question, the committee asked the question, the question has been raised whether this power should not be extended to other instances. And that's where it comes from. So it wasn't sort of specifically saying it must happen, but rather should it happen. Now 6A is going, so that won't exist anymore. So it's then still a question of should it happen. I suppose the thing I know Mr. Lubbers-Gaffney has addressed it, but maybe just to repeat it for me. I seem to be slower this morning. The statements and are submitted to an auditor, okay, to be audited. So the statements are submitted for auditing. This then gives them the power to verify the auditor's report. So sorry, under B, who's submitting the statements for auditing? Is it the IEC or is it the party? I'm going to have that. Mr. Lubbers-Gaffney, the 3B, who does that, IC? Or the party? Is that the party? Okay. And then the commission may appoint to verify or to audit if the party, if the accounting officer of the party fails to have that statement audited. Okay. So just explain again why the IEC don't want this.
Chairperson, as I said, I don't think it's been really in writing, but they felt that they already have the power to refer those statements to the auditor general for auditing if there's a need. The Act does not specifically give them that power, but apparently that can be done.
But I see that this power is not to the Auditor General, it's to an auditor. So if they say they can already submit it to the Auditor General, this is an additional one. Say you may appoint an auditor. I mean, I suppose it's something, Chair, we really need to flag for the IEC, but I really am a bit clueless as to what the problem with this.
Yeah, well, one would want to read all the documents, yeah. Yeah, okay. Welcome, Johan de Lange. He's come to monitor whether you guys are... He's come for lunch. He doesn't want to be so rude. But you see, Steve's being very rude. I just want to say he's coming to monitor his boss, Dion Rutman, whether he's behaving. But in respect of B, 3B, JJ, and others, 3B is fine. We accept 3B, surely, even now. What is the problem with 3B? JJ, 3B we can accept now. That's not an issue. Okay. So it's 3A and 3C that we need more clarity on. But 3A is straightforward. What's the problem with 3A?
Right.
So it's 3C
is straightforward. They just need to come and say why they've got a problem with it. I can't understand it yet.
Okay, then we go to 4.
Now, this is straightforward. Any issues about four? No. Is Vatishma going to cook the food? Or to find out? But it's fine, it's fine. It's fine. You know, I'm just saying that we can't send two people after that. Okay, 5, 6B1.
Money must be paid to the little commission.
course, those circumstances have now been included in the new 6 capital B for purposes of combining all those different scenarios. The necessity for section 9, subsection 3 and 4 became redundant. So those provisions have been included in the new 6B. So it's basically it's technical.
The co-chair is not here because he cannot be. He did indicate to me last night he may not be. We thought he might be able to make it, but unfortunately he can't. But there's a very good reason why he's not here. So let's leave anything that the public has commented for consideration for change. So let's leave that on. Let's move on to Section 8. Clause 8. Is there anybody raised anything about Clause 8? And tell us what it's all about quickly. Thank you.
Consequential chairperson, deletion of reference to Schedule 6. Capital A of the Constitution, forecasting in national and provincial government.
The repeat is referred to in item 41A or B, the Schedule 6, which is going to go anyway.
That's the 15 days, first of
the I think this one seems straightforward. Anybody got any comments? Can we agree with this one for now? JJ? Carol? Okay, let's agree. Fine. Clause 9.
Amendment of the preamble of the Funding Act, Chairperson, deletion of paragraph 5.
What does paragraph 5 say?
And where it is necessary for the reallocation of monies from the public fund and to regulate the repayment of unspent balances, so, where a member becomes a member of another party was retaining membership. So it's been the whole paragraph.
Okay. Our researchers and law advisors and the rest of us will check that it's correct. Yeah. Okay, clause 10.
additional amendments, Chairperson, deletion of reference to
61.2B.
61.2B. And 61.2B, you will remember.
Yeah, I think we do remember. I mean, that's one. This morning, no. Do you want to say something, Steve?
Yeah, this is the issue that I raised earlier. But first of all, I fully support the deletion of the floor costs and references. But I will chat to you at lunchtime. The problem that comes in is the 4A and 4B that overrides the earlier subsections. You've got it's a very technical formula that is applied for in terms of this determination of the Delegates Act to determine your special and then permanent delegates in terms of subsection 2 and 3. It sets out the process, but then you get to 4A and B that just turns it on its head that you may not have more special than permanent delegates. So no matter what you've obtained in terms of the clauses 2 and 3 earlier, you'll notice that 4A and B refer to despite subsections 2 and 3. And that, I think, has resulted in problems, but I don't think we've got the time now to go into a full discussion of that. So I'm quite happy with the amendment as proposed at this stage. But that was the issue that I referred to earlier.
You think that when we don't have time, you mean also tomorrow we don't have time? You mean that in our report to Parliament?
We might need to look at that and see if there is a problem with the way that that...
Yeah, then you can draft a paragraph or two.
Has been applied in practice.
Yeah, you draft a paragraph or two, show it to JJ, you guys arrive at consensus and lean, and then bring it to us. JJ, you're standing in for Imam, because, I mean, unfortunately, he cannot be here. Okay, go ahead, thank you.
Clause 11, page 7, Chairperson, amendment of the Electoral Act. Again, merely a deletion of reference to the Section 6A of the Constitution, purely consequential.
Here is on the phone, next clause.
Have I ever done this? No. Okay.
The chair, I was hoping, I was just saying that some stuff you could go on.
Yeah, you can go ahead. Yeah.
Chairperson, so I've dealt with clause 11, consequential. Clause 12, amendment of the Structures Act. Deletion of reference to Section 6B of the Constitution, which is to be deleted by the 15th amendment of. Consequential as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Let's then move on to 13.
Chairperson, in clause 13, proposes the insertion of paragraph C and F in section 27 of the Structures Act. Now, those two sections, those two paragraphs were deleted in 2002 when the floor crossing legislation was passed. So, what we propose is that to include the exact same wording back into the Act. Because those two paragraphs were deleted in 2002, and now we insert them back in the Structures Act. That's the proposal there.
Anybody got any questions? No. Shall we accept this for now? Okay.
I think see the ban on cropping pool.
That's right.
Come back.
Yeah. 40. What's subsection 3 there?
I'm going to point it out to you, Justin. It's a long subsection. Do you perhaps have your... Okay.
What's the effect of it? We want you to read it out. What is it?
Basically, it starts off by saying that providing that where the composition of municipal council has been changed as a result of provisions of item so-and-so of Schedule 6B.
All right, so it's really, yeah, okay, good. We accept.
accept that. 15?
15, 6,
15. Just need my three, the main section secret, so that's the delete that of sheet A. That CA, paragraph CA, refers to section 63 2D, Roman 2 of the Structures Act. Now that specific sub paragraph is to be deleted by clause 16. It's just the next clause you'll see there. You've got the clause 16. Paragraph B is amended by the deletion from the words except up to the end. In other words, 63 2b, Roman 2, to which reference is made in 62, is being deleted. So this is, as a result of the one amendment, as a result of the amendment in section 16, the amendment in section 5, clause 15 is required. It's consequential, technical.
Are we happy with that?
Cross-referencing in the local government municipal structures act is horrendous. I mean, I don't know who was chairing the committee at that time, but I mean,
you know, I must tell you, just for funny, look, just tell you, you know, how we wriggled out of the constitutional amendment, see, and how we thought the constitutional court was going to strike it down, and what did they do after all the hubbub, three or four? It's a torturous bill. It's a difficult bill to read, but you know what the politics was? Very simple. The ANC was a bit caught up by its own mass base, which is great, and adopted Chapter 7 of the Constitution, and 2 years down the road, suddenly we realized, hey, if you give all these powers to local government, they don't have the capacity to do some of these things. So how do you wriggle around the Constitution, Chapter 7, and allow the legislature to be more prescriptive than Chapter 7 allows? So we got these torturous sentences, eh? You know, torturous, and this was highly creative. Highly fascinating. It's not us as a committee. Intervention of the team Fanilo was part of, and an excellent DVG in Chippy Olva. And we really thought that bill, you guys CA at the time, you all took it to the court, NNP took it to court. Hell, and we were taken aback at how little has changed. So JJ, it's a torturous bill, I'll be the first to tell you. Dreadful. Not as bad as the child justice bill we got, let me tell you. That is like, it sets a record in this parliament. I've never seen anything like that. But it's a dreadful bill. Dreadful bill. Municipal Structures Act. I'll be the first to say. But we had no choice. Who, by the way, shaped Chapter 7? Oh, I shouldn't ask. Okay. Let's carry on.
Yeah, my point is specifically, I'm not looking at the whole bill, but just
and
you
know,
when
dreadful.
You made these amendments on floor crossing, whoever was chairing at the time, I mean, you know, to find you've got to read
62.2. Yes,
and that doesn't tell you the proper date. So you've got to then look at the next section, which is 63.2b.
Oh my God! For the next 3 days, Carol.
And there in those sections, will you find?
Okay, can I stand up and humbly apologize on my own behalf, on behalf of the international proletariat, and certainly the committee of the time? Okay.
So now,
having said that, can we move a motion that JJ will not raise this again? What do you think, Sean? Otherwise, this whole week, we're going to be battered. Okay, now, let's go on. No, you're right, JJ, you're right. Okay, let's go on.
So, 16, Chairperson, 16A, I think it's consequential deletion of all those words, because they refer to Schedule 6B of the Constitution.
Is that obvious? Is there an issue here? Even JJ doesn't want to. Okay, right, that's agreed. 17, please.
17B, we delete.
Obviously, again, it's the same thing.
Because 1A also refers to. This deals. 1A deals.
Which 1A now are you talking about?
Section 63.
No, are we looking at clause 17, are we?
No, we're still at clause 16. Clause 16B.
Clause 16B. By the deletion of subsection 1A.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
So 1A also refers to deals with floor crossing. That's why Steve makes it to repeal that one. And then 16C, clause 16C
questions here? I take it we in principle accept it for now. Okay. 18.
18 proposes the repeal of sections 93 capital A and 93 capital B of the Structures Act.
And that deals with?
93 special measures for application of item 6 of schedule 6B of the Constitution, 93B, publication of notice by the Electoral Commission. The Commission must publish certain notices as a result of any conduct in terms of schedule 6B of the Constitution. So both of them.
Any comments?
None.
So for now it's fine.
Clause 19, I think that is self-explanatory, yeah. Chairperson.
Any questions?
Same with 20. 21.
see where there are differences between what they're saying and what you're saying. Sometimes you may forget something and vice versa. So we'll have two little tables for tomorrow. I think we can start then with the customary succession book. So we will sit till about 4 tomorrow. Now, Gigi, are you here on Wednesday?
Maybe not.
Yeah, let's do as much of the customary succession book tomorrow as we can. While you're on, it is useful. So, yeah. Yeah. Because we will have finished within 2 hours. Yeah, that's what I'm alerting you to. We're going to bring it forward. Yeah. No. They've already made their submissions, Steve. And those, all of us, I think you know them quite well, don't you? Act on behalf of the ACTP and the IEC when it comes to elections. Also help us get them to come tomorrow, 10 o'clock. Okay. As far as process goes, is there any other in-house matters? Yeah, tomorrow if all goes well, we'll finish 4, half past 4, but if we have to sit later, 5, it's fine, it won't kill us. Because then we don't have to sit if all goes well on Friday, and even Thursday maybe. Okay? Now, what else do you want to know? We're not going to sit. Right, there's a progress on the provisional suspension of Mr. S.P. Zilabanzi. Magistrate, what's the issue here? JT is dealing with this matter. Okay. Welcome, Ima. We're just about ending, but we explained that the circumstances will be under control. Okay, so then we leave JT, but JT will be here on Thursday. All right, can we discuss outside here? What happens if you're not here? Do we have to deal with Mr. Zilabanzi this week?
That we are supposed to see them before the end of July, and Mr. Mayor voted to check if we will be able to see him, and we confirmed with him to say yes on Thursday. And the committee is not sitting on Friday, otherwise, he is available for both days, Thursday and Friday.
Well, can we discuss this? The point I want to stress is I was not chair. When it comes to magistrates, I do not chair. It's J.B. Sibanyoni who chairs, and it's Mashlawe who chairs. So I don't chair. And therefore, I often don't even come. So I'm not familiar with these issues. I was preparing that report on the Child Justice Bill when we met. So, JT, you are almost, if not, indispensable. So we'll have to check when you're available. And if you're not around, then we postpone it. In other words, your needs take priority in this particular context. So if you can't be in Cape Town, fine. Because, Carol, you are out of the loop as well. Were you there for the first or the second? Important. If you were there for the second, then you chair and take it forward. But I won't be able to do it.
Speak to JB, maybe. I don't know if that helps.
JB's not here for the whole day. Okay, why don't we agree on this? If JJ is not here, Carol will chair, provided from JJ and whoever else. She's got all the stuff. You will confer with her. And are we having caucus on Thursday?
No.
So we can meet on Thursday morning.